There was a great deal of discussion about where the station should go. It hadn't got much choice. It couldn't go over the river. They didn't want to make yet another bridge other than one crossing, and they needed a station. So eventually Chester seems to have been the leading light, and I can't remember the detail of all the fighting that went on, verbal fighting between these three, but it was pretty severe. So much they got the nickname of the Fighting Shrewsbury. Eventually they get together and they agree, but it's largely with the Chester pressure, and they built a joint. It was always meant to be a joint station. They must have all put some money in it. And it was designed by a man called Thomas Penson, who was a local chap, and Thomas Brassey, which you've heard of in Brassey Road, was the builder, the iron founder. The land and the building of the whole station was £100,000 in those days, which was several million. It was given parliamentary sanction by an act, a local act, saying they could buy up the land they needed in 1846. So the whole thing comes together, but it takes time. Well, all the railway has to be done by hand labour. So immediately you're going to get a whole lot of Irish coming over. They'd already come over in large numbers building the canals. And a good substantial lot of Irish people already living in Castle Forgate. It wasn't easy, because you'd got quite a lot of marshy ground to come in if you're coming in from the Birmingham side, and from the north as well. So they had to dig out land, because the land had to be level with the bridge level of the that was going to go over the river. So they had to build an embankment going right across what was the meadow, and it's still the line of the railway line now. And that was all carried from the what they had to dig down the top of Beacles Lane to get, you know how railway lines are way down, and the Danner Bridge has to go over them now. As I say, there's not an awful lot of passenger trains, but there are enough. But you've got a lot of goods trains, and they're goods guards that start to be living here. And by 1871, there were about 136 railway workers in the whole of this area. They vary the organisation much more in the 20th century, because they're nationalised for both world wars, and then they have to go back to reorganise companies. And it all gets very confusing. Not as confusing as it is now. But what they did essentially in all the changes in 1901 was not only to adapt the bridge over the Castle Forgate, but to put the platforms out over the river. And this is possible because they widen the bridge by iron, tremendous iron. In the old days, you always had huge trolleys piled high with mailbags. And if it wasn't mailbags, it was pigeon fancies. All sorts of baskets around. It's much more interesting than it is now.
Yes, I remember what an enormous struggle it seemed getting from our house in North Street to the railway station and going up Victoria Street, which is a heck of a gradient, walking up there on a summer's morning with suitcases and bags and goodness knows what. And my poor old dad, who was only a little fella, struggling with two enormous suitcases. No question of, you know, it would never have been questioned that we might get a taxi, because taxis would have been too expensive. So we just struggled, all of us, with bags and suitcases up to the railway station. And it just seemed like quite an effort. But once we were on the train and we were off, it was very exciting.
We have the link with Reverend Danner because he is the nephew by marriage of Sir William Pulteney, who by now was the MP for Shrewsbury, living in the castle. He has a very interesting origin. His name is Danner, or even though there is only one N in his name, because his family came from the Channel Islands, and therefore their name has French A's in it. And so it's Danner. No local in Shrewsbury who goes back for two generations or more would think of calling it anything else. I know that it won't be long before this will go by the board and it will sink to something different. He became a pillar of society, and so he became the chairman of the Improvement Commission in the town in 1790. The shambles at the bottom of Pride Hill was where cattle were slaughtered. There was no street cleaning facilities. There were rivulets of water as wherever possible, directed down the sides of the streets. But in the hot summer, the place must have stunk to high heaven. And so the inhabitants were quite pleased to think of how they could get out of it for a while. So Danner, among other things, he was one who opened up some of the streets like Ox Lane in town, but he also opened up the Danner named after him, which was the area in, outside the walls on the northern, northeastern side. You didn't have to have steps over a railway then. There's no railway. But he did make a walkway around the walls. And the steps went out just roughly where the gateway had been, where they still are. And where they're still arguing as to how they can get disabled access without coming up those steps.